Welcome back to Geek Show Help Desk. Yeah. Hello.
Hey there.
Hey, it was painful to get here today, but I'm here.
Yeah, Jared had to drag his way out of
troubleshooting.
Yeah. It was easier in the car, strangely enough.
Yeah,
last week.
Yeah. And that's saying something.
Yeah. Oh, this is the Geek Show Help Desk where we talk about tech gadgets and cool sciencey stuff. Let's kick it off by introducing our panelists. He's looking a little frustrated, but he's here. He's Jaren.
Hey, I'm Jaren. I ate a pizza with blackberries on it today.
Is it good?
No.
I mean, it's gluten-free. Like how can it be? It's gluten-free, right?
It was not a dessert pizza.
Who made it? All of your pizza sucks because it's gluten-free.
Frankly, it was an accident. I thought I ordered one pizza, but I said the wrong weirdo Italian name, and I ordered the pizza with blackberries on it. And then I had tech issues. You're a day, guys.
These olives look weird. They're kind of bumpy.
Why are these olives so juicy?
Yum.
All right. Well, we're glad you're here.
Thank you.
All right. It's Owen.
Hey, everybody. Follow me on Twitter at TechNoan or on Blue Sky. I'm not really on there much, but that's it.
There you go. And we have Lando.
Hey, it's Lando. I am happy to be here on the podcast tonight with you. Thank you for listening, dear listener. And on another note, we have a host. His name's
Tony.
It's me. Check me out on Twitter at Quad T Tony, Blue Sky at Quad T, or on other Geek Show podcasts. I was on the Space Show. This last week, and I'm going to be on again next week.
By the way,
how was the Space Show? Was that fun?
It's a good time. It's usually just Carrie and Rebecca doing awesome stuff with Star Trek, but I had some free time and they invited me on, so there we were. All right, let's see. Do we have any emails?
Yeah, we got three.
Oh no!
Nice, Tony. Smooth.
That's the wrong one.
And now you have to turn.
You're supposed to play that with the first, Tony.
Yeah, I was supposed
to play
Future
you going to be upset about that, by the way.
Dang it, future. Dang it, me. Sorry, future me.
There you go.
All right. Well, hang on a sec.
Now we got to wait for it. Anybody do anything fun today? Oh, there we go.
Just do them all.
We just threw them in there. It's fine.
Press all the random buttons.
Email.
Hey, do you guys remember Chris Cushley?
Yeah.
Nope.
Yeah. Is he our friend from over the pond?
Indeed.
Yeah, he's written in a few times. Yep. Yeah.
Oh, well, okay. He wrote in again. I'm so glad he's listening
back.
Still. He said, hey, guys, and Ling.
I think you're just part of guys, Lando. You've graduated
just part of guys.
You've graduated from Lawrence or Ludwig or whatever your name is.
How about that, man? Do you feel good? Anyway.
Oh, you should have seen Lando's expression. It was gold. Watch it on YouTube.
Yeah. Yep.
Just listen to your episode where a fellow listener asked about routers. I recently got a new one, so I thought I'd offer some info. I went from a Ubiquiti AP to a TP-Link Deco 20 mesh system. It comes with three nodes that you can place over your home. One node needs to be the hardwired, the other two join. Yep. It's networked via Wi-Fi. Mm-hmm. So just need power. The app walks you through the whole process step by step, so it's very user-friendly. It's Wi-Fi 6, so the speed is really cool. Really good, I mean. It can operate in router mode and handle DHCP, or it can be used in AP mode if you already have the rest covered.
That's nice.
PFSense firewall doing all that, so mine is in AP mode.
Oh, this guy got the PFSense going.
I like this guy already.
Good for him. Good for you, Chris.
I wish I was that cool with my home.
I don't even do that. I'm lazy.
I have a device. I've been meaning to. Won't work.
It even has parental controls if it's in router mode and can be managed via the app remotely. And even rebooted remotely if you need to. It was only 180 pounds.
Yeah.
You know what this is in your Monopoly money. I'll let you convert it. Let's say close to that, probably. 180 pounds.
The one that he's talking about, I think I see usually for around $200.
Yeah, $200.
For that three pack.
That's pretty well, yeah.
Yeah.
As for rebooting your router regularly, mine doesn't get rebooted ever unless something is wrong with it. Haha! So he just validated us. Unless something is wrong with it.
No, yeah, exactly. Unless something's wrong with it, and that's fine.
Well, guess what?
The problem was is Tony's like, I program mine to do every day.
No, that was Jaren. I do it weekly.
I do it weekly now too. So screw you, Lando.
And you know what? Doing it weekly, I never have any problems. Never have any problems.
If your solutions are reset it once a week or once a day, that's a problem. You should never have to do it unless there's
anyway,
actual state
my
issues.
Ubiquiti AP that's was on solid 4 years. Only yeah, reason it got rebooted course. Was if there was an issue. Firewall is the same and any other server I'm running stuff on. Chris.
Of course. Of course. Yeah. That makes sense. That's the sane way to do it. The solution's reboot. Not just, oh, let's just script a restart every day.
Reboot.
I'm not saying once you have week. To, and I'm not saying that they should design it so that you should have to. Like that's yeah. like that,
I just do it as a precautionary just, method.
No. This we, is not the heard... conversation we had. The conversation mm-hmm. was this router is better because it has okay. the option to reboot the router every day. Like that's a feature that it
just,
can reboot
just
itself every day.
Last week's stupid feature. Reference last week's episode. Discussion. We don't need to rehash
yeah.
this.
Yeah, it's just a marketing ploy.
With Lando's really high voice.
Me 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 me.
They're just letting people, they're like, wow, we have scrolled through Reddit and we see that many people reboot their router. Let's add that as a checkbox to sell Boom. More routers.
Done.
And that's a yeah. bad solution.
Works yeah. great.
It's got another
it's
email
a bad
from
feature and a bad solution.
Johnny. Hey, Johnny.
Your bad feature.
Hey, Johnny.
Hey, guys. You on one me. Of the shows, Tony shared his recommendation on how much extra power processor upgrades needed to have to be worth it. I think he said something like it needs to be 30% better to be worth it. Any that similar recommendations for TVs? Got a 65-inch Sony Bravia Ooh. 4K HDR I remember spending $2,000 on a few years yeah. ago and just saw a 75-inch Bravia on sale at Costco for $1,500. And I'm tempted but not sure if it's worth it. Thanks for the show. Both Help Desk and Arcade have quickly become podcast episodes I prioritize over every podcast each week.
Aww,
so
thank,
nice.
You. Thank you. That's amazing.
Aw, yeah.
I'll give my opinion, then Tony yeah. can give his opinion.
Do it.
What about Lando? Can Lando give his opinion?
I don't have an opinion.
Dude,
I just like... I would buy any TV I see at Costco.
You
like, that's
the frame.
A fine one.
You don't deserve an opinion.
That's fair. That's fair.
Oh. You know what? Sick burn.
We'll it's, give Ludwig a chance to talk. We'll let him
fair,
talk.
Fair ball. I'll allow it.
All right.
Can I say that you... Meh.
If your Sony Bravia, if your current Sony Bravia is full array local dimming and you're only going up 4 inches, I don't think it's worth it.
Even if it's full array local dimming, I don't think it's worth it, honestly.
But, I mean, if the new TV isn't full array local dimming and your current TV isn't, I don't think I would either. Pretty much only at this point, only thing I would upgrade for is OLED.
Here's the question, though. How do you, like, you can take a GPU and you can say, here's the performance uptick. How do you do that with TVs?
With TVs, I have two ways of measuring it. One would be new features that I decide
so
I can't
like,
live without.
Like
HDMI
2.1 was the thing that got me to upgrade
DisplayPort,
last time
whatever.
Because I wanted HDMI 2.1 with VRR and auto low latency and all the goodies for the new consoles. Right. So that's the one of the things I measure. And then the other one is if it's size, it's got to be a much larger leap than 5 inches. I would even say it needs to be over 10 inches to make it worth.
Well, he would be going
update.
10 from 65 to 75.
Okay. So size-wise, you might be worth it. But unless the new TV has any of those other features that you want to use, I wouldn't bother. Because also, you got to remember, it's a huge pain to haul out the old TV, haul in the new TV, especially if you're going to wall mount it and everything.
Oh, yeah.
Blech.
If you care about HDMI 2.1 and the new TV has full array local dimming or mini LED, maybe.
Yeah.
If you're really hard up for a new gadget. Yeah. If it doesn't have any of those, no, not worth it.
Wouldn't
bother. The picture won't be that much better.
No.
Yeah. Or if you're going from LED to OLED, you know, that falls under the feature category, if you ask me.
Right.
So
OLED is a big upgrade for any TV.
Yeah. There you go. Well, thanks for writing in,
Johnny.
Steve?
Johnny.
Almost. You almost got it, Tony.
I, was like, so close. I wanted this to close. Be like, so close. He must hear this all the time, but here's Johnny. He must hear that a lot. I'm sorry. I just did that to Johnny.
Probably his favorite movie, that The Shining. You know?
Shining.
We got an update from the guy who wanted laptop recommendations last week.
Oh, so, let's see how bad I did.
Hello, gents. Thank you so much for the information. I was listening to the podcast when you guys recommended the G16. Good timing, Tony. If any of you guys have an invite code to Blue Sky that you can share with me, I'll become a Patreon Tech Parent member. JK, I just became 100%. A member yesterday.
Oh.
Anyway, please, I sent
him
one.
Oh, nice.
We're good.
Oh, good, because I have one, too.
I probably have one or two.
Thank you, Snake Ripley.
All right. So did it say that he bought the G16?
No, he just said good timing. Oh. So I take that as a win.
Yeah. I hope you you know.
Yeah, anybody who's not actively yelling at me is
cool. That's a win.
That's a win.
Huge win.
In the episode last week, I said I was going to send him a link to some of the ones I was looking at. I actually remembered to do that. So
nice. Oh, good job, Tony.
Go me, right?
Wow. Past Tony is so cool.
Follow through, you know? That doesn't happen too often.
Wow. We might get a couple listeners doing that kind of thing.
I know, that kind of stuff right there. All right. Cool. Well, thanks for writing in, everyone. And before we go forward to the stories, there is a I just wanted to promote the what is the word I'm looking for?
Fundraiser.
Donate fundraiser. Yeah, the fundraiser donation kind of a thing that we have going for Lee George Cade. We've mentioned this on all of the mainline Geek Show episodes, and that's all over our socials as well. But yeah, like Carrie said in the regular episodes, he got pretty sick over the last 5 or 6 weeks and has been in the hospital the whole time, basically, and will be for at least another, I don't know, month or two, probably, hopefully less. But anyway, the point is his hospital bills are going to be probably quite large. So if you can, every little bit helps. Check the socials. We have his Venmo that was created for that on there. And then also, Travis the Pie Man stepped up and is making stickers of our logo now.
Nice.
And the regular Geek Show logo and the Space Show logo. And
I will
be
purchasing all of these.
Sweet. Yeah, all the proceeds go towards Lee for the next while. So thank you, Travis the Pie Man. You rock.
He's over at Pie Man Graphics, right?
Yep, Pie Man Graphics on Etsy.
Yeah, right on.
And and yeah, I
do you have to put in a code? Do you have to put in a code to do that, or just all sales?
As far as I know, just all sales of those of Geek Show related stickers will.
Yeah. So head over to Pie Man Graphics to pick those up. Is that where we go to get those?
On Etsy. Right on. Yep. So very cool. Very cool. And we wish Lee and his family the best and hope for as quick a recovery as possible. Yeah. All right. Let's see. On to the stories. We have a lot of AI stories again, and I think we should just kind of bounce around on those real quick, get them all out of the way, and then we'll move on to the not AI-related stuff. First AI-related thing, like 4 hours after we got done recording last week, Sam Altman was put back in as CEO again.
Like, literally that night.
Yeah. I'm just like, oh, dang it. We just barely reported on this. So, yeah, Jaren's got the follow-up on that.
Well, that's it. That's the news.
Well, the old board eviscerated. They're gone, except for one guy. Yeah. Except for the one guy who quit in solidarity, right?
The background behind this, though, a story came out like a day or two afterwards, which is kind of terrifying but interesting at the same time. So it's been rumored that OpenAI researchers warned the board of an AI breakthrough right before Sam Altman was ousted. Yeah.
Their chief scientist basically was saying it can only be described as being weird, as like saying bizarre comments and things. And so
the project was called Q-Star, and they believe it's a first step to artificial general intelligence.
AGI. So my theory of like the Terminator situation of like AI coming from the future to stop AI in the past or whatever was not too far off.
Terminator, right?
Yep. Yeah.
He's killing John. They got to kill John Connor. They were going after John Connor, who is Sam Altman.
Well, they were going after John Connor because he was the one that was giving the artificial intelligence a bad time in the future, Skynet.
Yeah.
And what they were also what was also going on was you had Miles why can't I remember his name right now? The guy that worked at Datadyne that was reverse engineering the piece of
Miles
the Terminator,
Dyson. Miles Dyson.
Yeah, the piece of the Terminator from the first Terminator movie. Yeah. Man, those movies are so good.
They're going to go
so
watch great. Those movies again for sure.
Oh. And you know what? Even the bad ones are still
pretty
great.
Bad ones. Even the ones where the boobs inflate. I'll still watch it. I showed up for that one. And
Terminator 3.
I was like, yeah, Okay.
What? Did I miss something when I was
in Terminator 3?
Oh, I did not. Liquid. No.
Yeah, you missed something.
Yep.
Oh, well, dang it.
I'm telling you too, there was the latest one, Genesis, I think was underrated. I thought that was pretty dang cool.
Is that the one with
Emilia Clarke and old Arnold?
I liked that one. Okay. I really loved Terminator Salvation at the time, even though
Salvation was a lot of fun. Yeah,
that wasn't well reviewed either.
Yeah. I thought that was a really cool one, too. Anyway.
So as we discussed in previous episodes, generative AI, what it essentially does is it statistically predicts the next word and just keeps on doing that over and over again. But AGI, it would have, like, reasoning capabilities.
Creative. Right. Creative abilities, right?
And real creative capabilities.
So QSTAR, it's implying that it may have learned how to do, like, very basic math.
New math, not untrained math.
Yeah, that's the difference. We talked. I think we talked about this last week specifically because Google and some other researchers saying.
Remember Lambda, where that guy was like,
"We're way far off with AGI. Yeah. Don't worry about it." And now this other company is saying maybe we're not so far off. But it was the ability to take things learned in one realm and apply them into another realm.
You have to wonder what could scare the board of OpenAI enough to take a leap like that and try and can the creator, like one of the founders and CEOs, and just try and make that coup happen. And like, what could have put them in that position to think that was the only way to go? Like, it's crazy when you think of that in the tech business world. That's something that usually is not, at least not overnight, right? Like something that doesn't happen this fast.
Yeah. The source of this article said, though only performing math on the level of a grade school student, acing such tests made researchers very optimistic about QSTAR's future success.
Row. Well.
And the board wanted to slow down, and Altman wants to speed up, right?
Which is crazy, because Altman signed that thing saying we need to slow down anyway.
He did.
Like six or eight months ago.
I think he believes he has the safeguards in place.
He thinks he has enough control. That's the hubris maybe that, the board that leads to... That's the hubris that leads to Skynet, you know?
Or the Matrix. So close.
Not good. We don't need to worry about climate change. We need to worry about AI. That's you know?
Like, I need to go.
Which apocalypse is going to get us first?
I know. And I'm just like, you know what? I need to go cleanse my digital fingerprint. I need to go delete all my browser history, like, before AI comes online. Because it's going to be step number one. They're going to be like, that guy.
We can blackmail him.
Yeah. He's got admin passwords and we got a lot of leverage.
And he has no conscience.
Basically.
All right. Well, also related to in the AI realm, it seems that AI is getting better at predicting weather than our friendly local TV station meteorologists.
Yeah. So nice. Meteorologists spend a lot of fake science. Just kidding. That's not very nice.
Take that, meteorologists.
I wanted to be meteorologist for a day.
Let me tell you, in no other industry can someone be wrong 70% of the time and still be successful, except for baseball. Baseball is another one where you can, if you bat 300, which is 30%, amazing.
Really good.
Baseball and meteorologists.
So that's what this article jumps into saying AI, that starts out with AI is starting to outperform meteorologists. And as you read through the article, that's not even what it's about at all. It's starting to be more predictive than Google's weather services, like other platforms that have been in place. And so this prediction program works. It takes the most recent states of Earth's weather and puts them together and does better. It uses historical data and basically predicts better, like AI does, right? Like that's what I
say.
AI
this
does.
Is AI.
It's
this
just is AI's the, jam. Tons of history, tons of historical data, tons of data points that may seem unconnected and incomprehensible to us. They put together and make these models that say, you know, out of 3 million weather events, they all had this one temperature flux right before here. And so they use that to craft a more to making connections that we don't
craft better typically. Prediction models and stuff like that.
And how far and now does it say Like, is it just so it, short it says, weather broadcast or long term weather broadcast?
Here in here in article or in paragraph three, Owen, it says. Sorry, I couldn't help the joke. It's better at predicting weather variables over the span of 10 days in under 1 minute.
Yeah.
At a 90% verification rate.
Yeah, 90%. So, wow.
90% that's super accuracy. Good.
That's really not bad. Good.
That's an A.
Minus. That is an A.
So
this reminds
it
me
outperforms,
of...
It outperforms traditional technologies that forecast weather patterns and also predict severe weather events, which are super
That's the most
volatile.
Important one.
That's super cool. Yeah.
Right? Like if we could get an AI that could predict tornadoes,
mm-hmm.
even a few minutes right now, all we can do is wait for specific like atmospheric things. But if they
stuff
can make
that,
other
stuff that happens
we can
right
see
before and, the tornado yeah,
like
starts.
I think we have 6 or 7 minutes and that's just a warning. Like that's a, hey, the conditions are perfect. And then,
yeah.
And then it happens. If AI could get better where it finds some data point that always happens when a tornado or something is going to go.
Even like, if you could get to like even just like half 10, an hour.
Yeah, 10,
15,
even,
20 minutes. Mm-hmm,
it could save lives. So
huge difference.
Pretty cool. It's called GraphCast. So
yeah, this reminds me of one of the things that blew my mind the most when I was little and I saw Back to the Future 2 for the first time. When they get to the future, they're sitting in their car and it's pouring rain. And Doc says to Marty, all right, get out and we're going to do it. And Marty's like, it's pouring rain. He's like, oh, wait a sec. It'll be done in 3, 2, 1. And the rain done. Just stops. And he's like, yeah, we have weather Sun prediction in the future down to the minute. It's like, what the heck? That's awesome. All right, cool. Well, I mean, that's a good thing AI could do. We want some of that. Let's see. Let's talk about YouTube's music AI tools now.
Yep, it's only a matter of time before AI makes all the new pop hits because it's just all regurgitated stuff anyway, right?
Yep. Boom, got him.
Anyway, sorry, this cough won't go away.
You all right?
Yeah, I'll be okay. Anyway, they got the permission from a few artists, John Legend, Troy Sivan, Charlie XCX.
I've heard of one of those people.
T-Pain.
Okay. Oh, two.
T-Pain.
Anyway. You could just put in a prompt, a ballad about how opposites attract, upbeat acoustic, and it will put out a song. It'll crap out a song in one of these artists' voices, and there you go. And it also has another one where you can whistle a tune, and it will fill in the song behind that, create a song around the tune that you whistled or hummed.
That's one of my favorite old videos is being like, how to write a rap song or a hip-hop song or whatever, and they're like, first... get an instrument you don't know how to play and just make a melody. That's the first part. And so I love that this is progressing to just whistle.
Just make a whistle.
Just
noise.
Put two notes together or three and we'll make a song.
Did you ever see that old Axis of Awesome YouTube video where it's the four chord song? All popular pop songs are just four chords.
Yeah.
The same four chords.
Yep.
Yeah.
I first noticed that with Blink 182. When I was trying to learn guitar in high school, I realized, wait a minute.
Oh, all they had was three chord
power
chords.
They used the
same
three power chords for all their songs.
Yep.
And I think this is an interesting take on what these artists like allowing it, like allowing YouTube to do it, because it's through a controlled structure that these artists could potentially get paid for, right? Like because YouTube is doing it, obviously YouTube is keeping track of the plays, what's being created, what's being
done.
That's
interesting.
And these artists will then get paid as opposed to the, you know, random guy in a studio, right? Which is where it's really gray right now. Like somebody
same thing
creating
with artists
a hit.
And like creating, you know, pictures, art.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And photographers and stuff, and allowing AI models to train off of those people.
Exactly. There's two things that artists, you know, take umbrage with AI as they should, and one is actually just the creation of the stuff without human hand, and the other one is why would I let a computer program sample all my stuff to build an algorithm to make stuff like me, but I don't get paid for it.
Yeah.
You know.
The counter argument to that I've heard is, those guys all trained from greats themselves, you know?
There's like something to...
All
I guess
great remix.
There's some...
They have the ability to put their own twist
on there's
that,
it's
though.
Different. It's still different, right. I think, you know? Yeah.
Well, and as a, you know, if you make the right query in ChatGPT or whatever, DALL-E, you can put your own spin on it, right? Because you're not saying, hey, make this right. just like them. You're saying, add something like this person and something like this person and something like this. But
right. what again, if you invented something entirely brand new? That's never existed.
Right. Because you can't unless you can add your own touch on that. I can see the difference. Yeah. Like, hey, here's my artwork. I want to incorporate my style with this style, this style, this style. Until you're adding some of your own, I don't think
so. It's my. I mean, I'm not sure if I agree with this argument yet or not. So take it for what it's worth. It's like something. Like, don't think this is my belief, right? But my argument is, you know, this new career skills that's been popping out is this prompt engineer, right?
Prompt engineer.
And so, yeah. like, from that point of view, when you're using tools like DALL-E or ChatGPT or whatever, your prompt is the art. You know what I'm saying? Like, you're using it like a paintbrush to make new art and saying, like Owen was saying, I want to do a picture of an astronaut in the style of Picasso mixed with this, this, and that, and you come up with something completely new. Where it's super gray, right?
It's gray, but I think the argument to be made there that's pretty, I don't know, I think it makes sense is that it's like, yeah, you could see that as a new tool, but there's so little effort that goes into the production of
it lowers the art barrier form. Of entry.
It doesn't have as much meaning.
That's what technology has been doing forever with lots of things. Like, that's like new.
The difference is the jump this time is just absolutely astronomical.
Right.
You know, you used to have to, if you want to train under, so here's the difference. If you want to learn how to do something, you have to basically, your brain has to create its own algorithm on what it's going to incorporate into what is your style. You don't have to do that with AI.
No.
You just say, I want this. And the algorithm that's already scraped the internet and scraped the art styles and everything else just says, okay, boom, here you go.
So, I don't think the
jump happens matters. I think it's fast, but it's like something completely new. If James were here, he'd make an argument about, you still have to be creative with your prompt, and like to get the right results that you're looking for is actually quite
that's
difficult.
That's bull crap. Like, the cool thing about the Sistine Chapel is looking up at it and imagining, oh my gosh, it took like however long it took, 10 years for Michelangelo to do that thing.
Right.
Like, all that effort is just gone. And
you're saying art is equivalent to effort. Good effort? Art requires effort.
And inspiration.
There's two pieces, effort and inspiration.
I could argue both sides of this argument. I don't think good art is in the effort, right now, you could have
12-year-olds. Right now you could have 12-year-olds that have an awesome creative mind. So when you train under an artist or when you train art, you're really just getting what you have in your mind already to have your hands actually be able to do it, right? Most creatives have it in their mind for years, and they train and try and get it there. Now you're removing that need to mentally train and physically train.
That constraint, though, is what makes the art great, though. Because
not necessarily, Jared.
If you see a movie that has unlimited budget and no constraint, how often are they good?
There's a story. I think James has told the story in the podcast before, but I live in Springville, right? Down in the Springville Museum of Art, there is a piece of art on the wall, or at least there was. I'm not sure if it's still there. I've been there for a number of years. But all this thing was, it was a giant, like, 3x3 canvas. In the middle of it was a literal McDonald's Big Mac box from like the 90s. That was it. That was the art. And it was like an allegory about like consumerism or something like that, right? And you look at this and you're like, I could do that. And we were talking to the museum director about this. How is this art, right? Because there's very little effort there, right, Jaron? It's in the art museum. It's a big deal. It's a valid piece of art with very little effort. And his response was, this person thought of it first. So that's one example where that's very low effort art. So I would argue that
that was objective.
It's subjective,
say,
right?
It's
you're
subjective.
Right. It is very subjective.
You know what I'm saying? Like,
I would look at that and say
effort
that's
is
not
part
art.
Of art, sure. It's
I
all
would
in
look
the
at that
beholder.
And say that's not art. That is garbage.
It really depends on how you value art. Like, is it more impressive and, because it was incredibly hard and painstaking?
It's the idea. Art's the idea. Art is the concept. It's your mind at work creating things.
Here's the next question then that would logically come up is, will we as a society start to value art differently, types of art differently, you know? So
look at the NFT
this
movement.
Painting
like we almost did with the NFT movement.
I was just thinking about that. This good painting point. Was hand painted by someone. And this painting was generated by an AI. This one cost $500. It was actually hand painted, and this AI one you can get for $6.
Because time equals money, right? Like that's the thing. Like, and as a person there, putting their the time
whole,
in,
there's the whole supply and demand equation too.
Yeah.
If the world is overrun with bad art supply,
it might just go away.
Only people
I would argue
care
that
about
the world.
Only people who put a monetary
arts forever.
Only people who put a monetary value on art care about the flooding of the market.
The other thing to consider is we can look back at the past and actually see a similar situation to this when photography became commonplace.
Right.
Artists that would take hours and days drawing photorealistic portraits and things.
Which is insane. Like, if you still see that,
that even if they are just painting what they see – and then to know that you could just go take a picture of it and have the same quality.
So by that same logic, that's invalid art, according to Jared, because it took less effort to push a button than it did to paint.
I think it evolved, right?
But it became its own form of art,
sure,
is what I'm saying.
I think as art gets outpaced by newer technology, there's always that like, oh, the old school is better. There's still people that are like, oh, man, I still like to go get my shutter camera.
35mm
There's a reason
we
still teach school because we've done it the same way we've always done it. That doesn't mean it's right.
And so. I'm not saying my opinion is right. It just makes for interesting conversation.
Absolutely.
YouTube,
me too.
With music AI, I think it would be super interesting for people that just like to have something on in the background while they work and don't want to think about what they want to listen to. Just...
right.
It'd be something that's kind of techno-y that evolves over 8 hours, you know?
Right. It's called YouTube and Solify Girl, dude. That's what you want.
Yeah, but this is like having your own DJ.
Yeah, but if I could have AI do it for me.
Yeah, like something new every day. You know?
It's cool because you can really tone it to your mood at the time. You could say, give me a 4/4 beat and, you know, throw in some, I don't know, somber mood. And it can be like, oh, okay. You know, you don't have to go find that.
Give me an 8-hour song that sounds like the background music of Blade Runner. Go. Yeah.
Whoa.
You know?
You just
That's what it is.
just like 700 hertz.
Every once in a while you hear a voice go, Atari.
Yeah.
to put a bow on this, I think in my opinion, Tony's probably hit the nail on the head. We as a society got to decide how we're going to move forward with this and what we're going to do.
That's what it's going to be.
I think there's two parts of it, right? Yeah. As you consume art, it's yours, like to whatever. But the argument and the main pain point is that what about these people whose lives are art? Their careers are art. How do they not lose value and their livelihood and everything they have? And so that's where... I like this YouTube thing a little bit better because they're opting in, and Google has the ability to track it, right?
Exactly. Any algorithm used to train an AI should credit and pay for the stuff that it uses to train with.
They certainly haven't yet.
But that's how it should be.
With Owen's comment there, like artists are not the only one in danger here, right? We're IT professionals,
programmers,
most of us, right?
Yeah, for
programmers.
Sure.
Yep. We're all of our jobs, to some extent, are in danger in some way or another, right? Mm-hmm. On the same comment
not
made
accounting,
last year, right?
That can't be automated.
No, not at all.
Absolutely not. It's so creative.
Accounting
can be very creative. Thank you very much. It just results in jail time. That's all.
There you go. There you have it, folks.
Boom. You put
creative accounting.
AI in jail for its creative
The comment I made last week to the effect of AI is not going to take your job. Someone who knows how to use AI is going to take your job, right?
Well,
I think that applies here with artists as well.
Well, and the artists are fighting back, and I think that kind of leads right into my story here about artists that are poisoning AI training. Mm-hmm. So,
oh, interesting.
So they have found ways to go in and... post art out there that gets fed into the AI algorithm and then starts to distort their work and distort the results that the AI is using. And this article's a couple weeks old, but I still wanted to talk about it. So they, you know, they're waiting. People are waiting and waiting and waiting for legislation to catch up, right? Like that's one of the things that the original letter that's that Sam Altman and a bunch of other people signed was, yeah. Hey, we just need to slow down until, you know, regulation catches up and, you know, so that we're not doing this wrong. And, but, artists are not willing to wait. And so they're, I'll see where they say, I want to say how exactly they're doing it. So it says, currently, artists don't have many options to stop AI makers, which generate images based on user text prompts from referencing their works. But you can, and you now have an opt-out process. Like, you can actually go into OpenAI and tell them to opt your data out. But, like, if you're using an older version of the training, like, it's there, right? Like, it's by, they can't go back and rip your data out of the training from past, like, GPT-3, you know? And so you go and you opt out. That's kind of the only things you can do. But they've, here's the company.
It's well, like I mean, here's the issue you run into is it says right here, after AI models have learned from their training data, they no longer have access to that data. The models only retain the concepts that they learned.
Yep.
When someone makes a request of a model, the model generates output based on its understanding of the concepts included in the request. It doesn't search for copy content from an existing database. And furthermore, down underneath that, it basically explains that artists that have already had their stuff co-opted or opted by algorithms are just kind of out of luck because the algorithm has already learned everything it can or wants to from that piece of art. Yep. The only option they have is to opt out for future usage of
Stuff. And even then, that can't be trusted because you're going off of what the AI companies say they will do.
Well,
right?
Yeah,
and it's almost impossible to prove that they did use your work, right?
Exactly.
So there's this new service. These guys at the University of Chicago created a service called Glaze. Okay, and it goes in and it slightly modifies the pixels in an artist's image to trick the AI model into seeing a different art style.
Whoa.
And they released that tool to this guy Ben Zhao, who's the researcher over there, is releasing another tool, it doesn't say which, but to help artists even further scramble how AI interpret, right? Because AI is looking at ones and zeros. It's robotic, right? It's reading the machine language pixels. And so all you have to do to poison the training model is introduce something that looks the same to the human eye. But looks very different to the AI, like you know, like
interesting.
And the AI, So,
Tony,
and so it says, you know, right now, the AI company, the trainers have 100% of the power, and they're just trying to balance that out. So, if artists use this tool called Glaze to slightly alter any pictures that they post on their website, like, you know, obviously they have their art that they've drawn, they've done prints of that are in art shows and being sold physically, but you want to be able to send that and you want to be able to market that and show that online. And that's a lot of those free images are what AI scrapes, right? Like that stuff that's like that you want everybody to be able to see your storefronts, you know, imagine if like walking by, if somebody, you know, set up a super fancy camera, like up at Park City in one of those art stores. And like, if you've ever gone into art, real, like really expensive art museums or art shops, like you'll see no cameras.
What you're looking for is gallery.
There you go, man. I couldn't get
art
there.
Gallery.
Art gallery. If you ever go in, they'll see, you'll have signs that say no photos, right? Because that's like,
that protecting the
devalues what they're trying to do there. Right. Cause to the human eye, it's about the observation, not the physical thing. But to the artist, it's about how much effort and time they put into that artwork. Mm-hmm. And that's the value of it. And they're hoping that you want the intrinsic value, the time and the value, and also the artistic value, and that you're willing to pay thousands of dollars for that piece of art. But anyway, so Glaze, go. I think it's interesting. Artists are finding ways to fight back. I don't know. I feel like this guy at this University of Chicago just knows artists. I don't think he is one, you know? He's just like, you know what? I can do something about this.
Yeah, I like it up here.
So there it's interesting to see that difference.
All right. Let's talk a little bit about, I think we're done with AI.
That's it.
For this
That's
episode.
That's it. After 40 minutes. Yeah, like, we're almost done with the episode. It's time to be done here, guys. Yep.
I do have a nature one about bats.
We'll do a lightning round and then call it a day. My lightning round is actually a review update slash correction to something I reviewed, 2 months back, roughly? And it's these Liberty 3 Pro earbuds. The update I need to make to them was I mistakenly said in the review that these do not have Qi charging. They do.
Oh, wireless charging also.
Do have wireless charging on the bottom. You just plop them on there, and it starts charging up.
Did you find that on accident? You just set it down on your charger?
It's been so long that I can't remember who was asking me about it on our Discord and pointed out that the spec sheet said that it had it. And I was like, what? And then I came home and tried it out. And yeah.
Lo and behold.
There you go.
Tony convinced me to buy them.
That's the second piece.
Silly him.
The second piece of the review that I'm going to. The second piece of the review that I want to update is they are actually really good for low latency gaming on handheld devices.
Wow.
Give me a
comparison against the AirPod Pro 2s.
That's exactly what I'm going to do because I tried the AirPod Pro 2s with the new Steam Deck OLED, which we will be reviewing in this upcoming episode of Geek Show Arcade.
Woot.
And I compared the AirPod Pro 2s and I compared these. And these are significantly, noticeably better keeping up with what's going on the screen, the mouth, you know, the talking of the characters, the latency of hitting the button for the guns and things like that. The sound is happening almost simultaneously with what's on the screen, to the point where I might not even bother to get a pair of earbuds with the dedicated 2.4 gigahertz dongle, which provide, you know, the lowest latency possible. These were that good, surprisingly. I was very, very surprised because they have Bluetooth, these do have Bluetooth 5.3, which support the low latency mode, and the Steam Deck OLED also has Bluetooth 5.3, as well as I believe the ROG Ally has Bluetooth 5.3, but I haven't tested it with the Ally yet. So, but yeah, fantastic latency response with these on the Steam Deck OLED, and I would assume it is on most any 5.3 device. And also cool, eBay has a ton of these refurbished for sale from the manufacturer, for like $65.
Is that kind of a red flag though? Bunch of refurbs?
Oh no, eBay.
Every manufacturer has refurbs.
Yeah, you can buy manufactured refurbished Sonys, you can buy manufactured refurbished Apple, you can buy manufactured refurbished. And this is just on eBay. It's all on eBay. eBay has a special refurbished site. I buy stuff from there all the time. It's been great.
All my Sony headphones I've bought.
Yeah.
Like the earbuds have been refurbished and they've been great.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, I think I gave these like an 8 or something, 8.5. I'm upping them to like a solid 9. Maybe 9.25, for especially if you can grab that eBay recertified by the manufacturer for $65 or $70. It's great option.
Yeah, for me they have a reason to exist now because they're perfect for mobile gaming.
Yep. There you go. All right, Jaren, lightning round.
There is a new gene editing thing. For the technical term there, to lower high cholesterol.
I sent you this article.
For the 3 million people out there who have very high cholesterol in the U.S., I'm one of them for some stupid reason. If you change the A to a G in your genome, you can turn off the PCSK9 gene off.
This makes total sense.
But how do you do that in a fully formed adult?
So there's a newer, more precise form of CRISPR called base editing, and this is what it's doing, and it can change your genome, and they're being very careful because once it changes it forever.
There's no going back.
Yeah.
So they've tested it out in monkeys so far. Lucky monkeys who can eat as many burgers as they want. Ugh. Why do monkeys get special treatment? That's not fair.
I don't know if they see it that way, Jared.
I'd sign up.
They're like, give us burgers. You got everything else, man.
Yeah,
give us cholesterol.
They lowered cholesterol in these monkeys by like 50%. 55%.
I'm so concerned. I'm so questioning how they actually do the procedure. Is it a pill you take? How do they do it? Do they go in with a laser? Do they just change one gene and it cascades through your entire gene?
Yeah. How does that work?
How do they? I don't know. Do they do?
Me no scientist.
This is some Black Mirror level stuff right here.
Like how do they be like? I mean, there's lots of genes in there, Tony. Lots of genes.
I have no idea. This is amazing.
They have had a few human trials who have already have heart disease, and it's going well in them so far.
Jaren, just sign up.
I'd have to go to New Zealand. Whoa, there's no downside to this.
I was
going to
say, what's wrong? New Zealand sounds awesome.
Yeah. So anyway,
well, cool.
Technology may improve my life someday.
Yeah. Owen, lightning round.
Sorry, I had to stop the annoying beeping.
It's still going.
I know.
Is your UPS going bad?
It's going bad.
Lando, lightning round. Owen, fix your beeping.
Yay.
Owen, fix your beeping. All right, so we're going to talk about some cool science-y things here for a second. Currently, most air conditioners and fridges rely on really bad, poor methodologies for cooling things, right? But it's kind of what we have at the moment because it's cheap and easy. But these things, like current fridges and things, are not like super efficient. They're like 30% efficient, and it's just terrible.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So this person named Emmanuel Defay at the Luxembourg Institute of Science and Technology and his colleagues have developed a coolant-free refrigeration device made from metals lead, scandium, and tantalum. I can't pronounce these metals.
What are those metals again? I didn't catch that.
Screw you, Jaren. It can reach maximum efficiencies of more than 60%, almost double that of a typical single room air conditioning unit. So new advancements, and they're more efficient and cheaper and easier to run than our current cooling methodologies that we have now.
Sounds like there's no downside to this.
There's really not.
The monkeys get it first, don't they?
Probably.
But the monkeys get it first.
This isn't multiple metals. This is one metal. Lead, scandium, tantalate.
Sounds
made from three of those three metals.
Tantalizing, kinky.
That is crazy.
Anyway, this is world changing stuff, right? Because we spend so much energy keeping our houses and our cars and our fridges running all the time and cooling.
So much energy.
Yeah. Here's another new word.
That pulled heat out of the. Yeah. What if you had something that pulled heat ambiently?
Here's another new word to learn for today. Here's your word of the day: electrocaloric.
Electrocaloric. Yeah, I didn't say that.
What does that mean?
Expending.
A phenomenon in which a material shows a reversible temperature change under an applied electrical field.
Isn't that crazy?
So you apply an electrical field and it.
Electrocaloric.
And what, Owen? And what?
And it does things. Shut up, Jaren.
Isn't he awful?
You didn't have to do that.
I'm with you. Jaren's the worst.
You sounded smart.
I hoped you knew more, okay?
Yeah. Electrocaloric, of course. It does this.
About calories. A bunch of people trying to cut down on calories.
All you do is pour Skittles into the machine and then it works.
Obviously.
The rainbow.
Feel it, even.
What's the chances of us seeing anything like this put to use in the near future?
Landon didn't read that part.
Oh, sorry. I got a text message from my wife. Make cooling better. That's it.
That's not what he asked.
Did you say what the applications in the future were?
When?
Oh, I don't know. It doesn't say in the article.
What are we getting this? Make cooling better. That's why.
I knew that question was coming, and it doesn't say in the article when.
I still like that he shot his shot. He was like, I heard 95% of what Tony said, and that this is my.
Sometimes
output.
That methodology works, guys.
Well, it's AI,
but
right?
Sometimes it does not.
No, I don't think it ever works, but usually people don't point it out.
Like Jaren just did to me a minute ago.
He's a jerk.
Oh, my gosh.
There's no win in the article. Sorry, Tony.
Okay. No worries. Well, hopefully in our lifetime, that'd be great. Owen, lightning round.
All right. So SpaceX, do I want to wait on that one? It's kind of timely.
No.
Okay, so SpaceX Starship took its, they took their Starship 2. We got our OTF-2, Orbital Test Flight 2, and they did a bunch of new things. They fixed their launch pad, gave it a deluge system so it didn't blow giant chunks of...
Doesn't do that.
It worked perfectly. All 33 engines lit up. This was good.
Wow.
They are trying something that only... I think Russia does this with their rockets. It's called hot staging. So hot staging is where you pre-light the engines on the stage two rockets before you before you separate, right? So that there's no loss of thrust. In order to do this, they added about a 6-foot ring divider between first stage and second stage. The flight itself ended with both devices achieving a rapid unplanned disassembly.
Yeah.
Boom. So you had your first stage came down, started down. I think what happened is that they pulled too many rockets. They shut too many rockets off and it couldn't re-stabilize on the way down. And then ended up, they think maybe the thrust from the second stage pushed it way off course. And also because the thrust sent it downward, you know, when you apply that top pressure, it sped its descent a lot faster than they thought. But then second stage flew off, almost achieved. I mean, it went above the Kármán line, right?
Yeah, it was in
space.
Space.
And then all of a sudden something started rapidly burning on it and you see it just kablooey. So
beep, 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 beep. Exploded.
It was supposed to make an orbit around the Earth and land near Hawaii and didn't do that. But they already have a couple more starships ready to go. So the same thing they're doing, they're iterating fast. This is a really important step for the moon mission, I believe, which they're planning to launch with this, and also their V2 satellites, you know, the big boys that can do a lot of backhaul their Starlink.
Don't forget that this rocket, 33 Raptor engines basically glued together, is the most powerful rocket engine humans have created so far.
Yeah.
Super heavy.
The one Raptor engine is like the Falcon 9, right? That's what the Falcon 9 uses
there's
to go.
There's 33 of these.
And there's 33 rockets on there, and they're all having to fire at a certain time. One of the things they learned from the last flight that they brought into this flight, they can't just cut all the engines on the first stage at once because it causes valve hammer. So basically when they shut all the engines off and all the engines stop accepting fuel at the same time, it damaged the valves so that they couldn't relight when it was coming down. Yep.
Interesting.
So a bunch of cool stuff out there about it. You can watch, they filmed, SpaceX filmed super zoomed in good photos of the flight this time. And they released those, so you can see the moment where the stage one explodes, seemingly from the middle of the rocket, and then you can see also a gas release from stage two as it then explodes off in the distance.
Wow!
So you got about another I think it was 20 or 30 seconds of stage two flying off, maybe a minute, and then you see it kind of blow up. So. Cool. Nobody was harmed. The debris all fell into the ocean, where it will hopefully not poison anything. And and that's it. People were ticked off, of course, over there at Starbase. They don't like it. It was loud. It's too loud. So, but that's kind of comes with the territory. So there you go. Yep. Go watch the video. You can still go watch the video. It's still worth watching if you haven't seen it. It's really cool.
That's only like 2 minutes long too. Yeah. So it's not like it's a big ordeal.
Yeah.
Cool. All right. Well, there you go. That is it for today's episode. Before we head off, let's have a big shout out to our awesome Patreon backers, patreon.com/gadgetspot. If you donate $6 a month or more, you get a shout out on the air, along with all the other neat perks that our Patreon members have. And Jaren has that list for us right now.
Big shout out and thank you to David Broschinski, Connor Kisa, and Wiffleball Tony. Thank you, guys. Thanks to Interrupt Everyone to remind everybody your name, be an end user. Rewards, rebooting router registries religiously.
That's some Andy alliteration Bird, right there.
Be the 8-year-old. Travis Johnson, check out the new Baldur's Gate 3 custom tech stickers at Pyman Graphics on Etsy. Jerby, no name, no color. Keslo, Eric Simon, Eric Cruz. Owen has tech cred. Matt Nelson, Mr. Hand, and Mr. Spicoli in 2024. Aloha, it's our time.
What?
Josh D. Adam, Aaron Faulkner, Stuart Lloyd, Joe, there's no place like G28, X0, Y0, Z0, Ryan M., and Adam Hecht.
He was just trying to get through that without coughing. So
yeah, I noticed.
I got choked up there on Jeremy.
Well, he's a nice guy.
Yeah,
I get it.
All right. Thanks for everything, Patreon backers. You are awesome. That's it for today, and we will see you in a couple days on Geek Show Arcade. Or if you don't listen to Geek Show Arcade, which you should, we'll be back next week. But until then, Lando, finish us out.
Hey, there's no need to save your work. IT automatically keeps backups. When your computer crashes and you lose hours of work, no worries. Just call your IT team. Be an end user.
Oh my gosh.